You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where honestly, we're fresh out of witty openings to be in the show. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, and I'm sure there's a lot to be said about a lot that's happened in the past week. A lot has been happening over the past few months, and part of me could go on and on for hours, but another part of me just... all I have to say really is the answer is individualism. And I don't mean that in some sort of religious sense. I don't mean that in some sort of puritanical sense that, you know, oh, follow the doctrine of individualism. It's just individualism is the idea of seeing people as unique individuals, of judging them for their actions, their choices. Their individual choices, not seeing people primarily as members of a group. And it seems we've gone in the opposite direction to where we're not only seeing others as members of a group primarily, we're seeing ourselves as members of a group primarily. And all that matters is our group's agenda. And I say that because of all of the footage that's circulating, there was one specific piece of footage that really, really got me. It was of a protest turning into a riot. I don't even know what city. It may have been Portland, probably Portland. But there were all of these, I assume they were white people, all of these people dressed in black, going up to a Target and starting to break down the windows and everything. And there was just a black girl in the front yelling, "No, stop, please stop. That's not what we're trying to do. We have something to say." And it legitimately made me cry because agree or disagree with the protests, whatever you personally think, this country, America, is founded, the United States of America is founded on the idea that everyone has a right to say what they have to say and what they believe peacefully. And that young woman, that young black woman, just wanted to say what she had to say peacefully and not have the message disrupted, her time taken away from her. And it was being taken away from her. And just as a human being who believes strongly in individualism, to see people just worry about their agenda over respecting individualism, it broke my heart. And that's where I am about all of this stuff. Just individualism. See people as individuals. So why don't we see the individuals that are also part of this show? Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Heavy opening, but deservedly so for the year's worth of news we've had since the last episode. It feels as if...
weren't we in a corona news drought? And now we just... I think all that pent-up news just gushing all over the place.
I kind of miss the pandemic.
I noticed the media has not been concerned whether or not the protesters and rioters are wearing masks.
Yes, as the founder of the Babylon Bee tweeted out, apparently it's more dangerous to go to a church than to burn one down, at least in terms of pandemic-related news. But we'll get to all of that. We'll get to all of that. We've had so much going on, and it feels like an eternity since we last spoke because so much has happened.
Daniel, so much has happened. Like, for me, just before you give your announcement here, for me, when you say that, I feel like a switch flipped because I saw that video, right, of George Floyd being murdered, and I was like, Jesus fucking Christ. And then 2 days later, our cities are being burned down. And I'm just like, what? It's like, it just feels like a whole different world. Anyway, sorry.
Well, speaking of whole different worlds, we'll get into all that in the news in a moment, but it will be a whole different world here on the podcast for a while, as next week will be my last show, at least for a while.
You're fired.
I'm taking a hiatus, and next week I'll announce more about what that hiatus is and why I'm taking it, and but I thought I'd mention it this week to give you time to prepare yourselves mentally.
Well, and just to be clear, this hiatus has been planned.
Yes, this hiatus has been planned for quite a while now. It was, in fact, going to happen before we learned about the pandemic and all the COVID news. And then Justin and I talked it over, and I decided that it actually made sense for me to stay on until the COVID...
Until society collapsed?
That's right. Figured we'd lead us into total destruction of civilization.
This is planned like those delivery of bricks strategically right outside the police station, right?
That's right. Okay. And then I would get on out of here and let you folks deal with that.
Thanks!
But so now COVID is sort of over, I think. I think the pandemic is over. We can hang the mission accomplished banner behind us on COVID-19 and move on to a race war. But you'll have to do it without me, at least after next week. So there you go.
Well, also joining us. Go ahead.
You will be missed, but we will try and replace you as best we can while you're gone. So hopefully you practice while you're gone. Maybe listen to an episode.
Wow.
Oh, wow. That's right. I can be a consumer of the show for the first time in 8 years.
Wow. I was just going to ignore you and move on to William, but he's saying we're going to replace you and to do better. Wow. Jesus. He's moving up to second in the pecking order.
That's
finally,
right.
So he feels
I'm grasping for power, just like Antifa.
Well, as you already heard, also on this trip from Dale's lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, which he's probably got a fuckload of that right now from what it seems like. William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, can we talk about something light for a second? Something hopeful? Something that's not depressing and shows that humanity has a future? Yes. We launched astronauts privately for the first time in human history out of Cape Canaveral, Florida. They docked successfully with the International Space Station. And Doug and Bob, the dad astronauts, as we refer to them, made it safely. We had a attempt on Wednesday, and then the actual weather did not cooperate, Justin. Thunderstorms in the afternoon in Florida. You know how that goes.
In the summer, yeah. I'm surprised.
Surprised,
totally,
yeah.
Surprised.
Very surprised. But they were able to squeeze it in between the clouds on Saturday, and had a great launch. And yeah, it's if you want to restore your hope, I think all of you should watch, and we'll link it in the show notes if I don't forget before the end of the show, Elon responding to question and answer after the launch, and his impassioned speech about wanting to make humanity a multiplanetary species. So there is hope in this world. This too shall pass. None of us lived through the late 60s, early 70s, but as these cycles go, this too will pass.
Technically, William, there's no hope for this world. There may be hope for Mars or another world, but this one is dead and gone.
And the Belters.
But, now. But... The Floridians are pretty good. They were, I was sitting by the pool, and, you know, the new trend of listening to your music or whatever you're listening to very loudly when other people are around actually paid off, because somebody near me was listening to the launch. And then other people sitting by the pool were looking at the sky as if they could see the rocket. I couldn't see the rocket, but maybe it's a Florida superpower. Like, you know, when Kal-El is in the Earth sun for so long, it gets superpowers.
Yeah,
maybe if you're in the Florida sun
for so long.
Yeah,
I think it was going in the other direction. Yeah, I think it was going in the other direction.
I don't know.
But I like
how
a group of people can convince themselves that they do see the rocket. I do like that.
But they actually, they cared is the point. How many other states actually listen and pay attention to it around a swimming pool? I think that's kind of cool.
Here, yeah. We're not allowed to go swimming, so.
Yeah, that's
well,
true.
And it mm-hmm. is a huge step forward. I know there was a little setback with SN4, the Starship, which will land on the moon and Mars eventually this week. But you know, that's part of testing and rapid iteration. They had a test, and looks like some. I don't have any inside information, but from my layman eyes, looks like they had some ground equipment malfunction, and then a bunch of fuel exploded, and it was exciting and. Sad at the same time. But SpaceX is pushing on, and it's really, you know, I'm really proud of all the guys and gals that contributed to it. And Elon said something about, he estimates about 100,000 people were directly and indirectly involved in this whole endeavor of privately launching astronauts into space. And not sponsored, but probably should be. You can go to SpaceX.com and reserve your flight into space now. So
how much is that?
I don't know that there's a price, but I'm going to say it's probably reasonably in the six figures.
Reasonably. Is Machete the first person who gets sent into space?
I don't know. But will there be snakes on the Dragon? And what one more thing just to add to the positive news before we dive deep into the negative news. So there's an astronaut tradition where the folks who fly first on a spacecraft give it a name. They actually named the Dragon Endeavour after the space shuttle Endeavour. Both Doug and Bob, their first journey on into space was on the Endeavour, on the shuttle Endeavour. So this will forever be known as the Dragon Endeavour, or as Elon put it, the Dragon ship or Dragon Spaceship Endeavor or something. I don't know. He coined it a little differently, but it is the Endeavor.
At least they didn't call it something stupid like Falcor or Drago.
Rocket McRocket Face?
Yeah, exactly.
I have one thing to say to Mr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, which is eat it! Eat it, Neil deGrasse Tyson, who once said that private space exploration is a non-starter because it's too expensive and too risky. So,
yeah, well, there's a lot of people. A lot of people. People pulled up the old CBS interview from, gosh, 6-8 years ago, where Elon was like, you know, it's most probable that SpaceX will be the first one to launch humans into space, which is strangely prescient, as that is what just happened. 9 years of no American launches of humans, and now we're back in space.
So we officially in the Iron Man 2 part of the cycle, where Elon, who actually was part of the inspiration for Tony Stark, says, I've just successfully privatized space travel.
Yes. We will. There's a lot more to do, a lot more a lot more challenges and bumps ahead, but it's really exciting. But speaking of bumps, on a more personal note, the protests are coming to Long Beach tonight, so we may have some live reporting from downtown Long Beach, which not looking forward to. But follow me on Twitter and join our Discord. I'll be posting some firsthand accounts, and not quite in the Sophia Narwitz tradition,
or Jack Murphy.
Yeah,
did you see Jack Murphy doing live video in DC, Daniel?
I did not. I've tried to avoid all this in terms of things that are close to me. I happen to see a video of protests like outside my office where I work all the time, which was horrifying. So, William, as a business owner, do you know any Koreans?
No, but without giving out too much information, I do have a high perch, which I have a direct line of sight to the store. So so I'll be safely out of the mess, but able to respond to it should any mess occur.
Fantastic. Godspeed, as they say.
All right. Well, before we get into the riots, we do have one other terrible news story to discuss first. So let's get into all of it in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Well, before we dive into what is sure to be the most depressing two stories we've had put together in quite a while, why don't you go to patreon.com/themidside and show us how much you appreciate the show and how much you want to support us by giving a couple bucks every time we produce one of these things. It helps us keep those lights on, and that's more important than ever. Trump would like to not keep the lights on over at Twitter. He's in a little spat with Twitter over a fact check that the site put on one of his tweets recently, and in response, or maybe not in response, but maybe as a, that was a catalyst, President Trump, flanked by Attorney General Barr, signed an executive order in the Oval Office last Thursday that interprets Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act of 1996 as not providing statutory liability protections for tech companies that engage in censorship and political conduct. The president's order, which also cuts federal funding for social media platforms that censor users' political views, came just 2 days after Twitter took the unprecedented step of slapping a misleading warning on two of Trump's tweets concerning the fraud risks of nationwide mail-in balloting. That didn't go over well with Trump. So, to quote Trump, my executive order calls for new regulations under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act to make it so that social media companies that engage in censoring any political conduct will not be able to keep their liability shield. For those of you unfamiliar, Section 230 protects online platforms from liability over comments that are created by other people. So, for instance, the New York Times is responsible for the content they create, but they are not liable for, say, the comments on their articles. And Twitter is not responsible for the tweets that people send out in terms of liability. But if the president gets his way, and if Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri gets his way, Twitter may actually face liability for any tweet on its platform if Twitter engages in quote-unquote political censoring or misconduct. That would be bad. Justin, we're not particular fans of social media here on the Midside. We have our critiques of the platforms and have often taken them to task for quote-unquote fact-checking and stifling opinions and whatnot. But is this the answer to allow them to be sued for anything that's said on their platforms?
No, it's obviously not, because you can be critical of the way someone runs their business and still recognize that they have a right to run their business the way they want to run their business. Because as individuals, it's their company and they get to decide what to do with it. The society, the collective, does not get to decide what they do with their business. I'm just going to keep hitting this all episode because it's all fucking pissing me off. Like, seriously, this is completely ridiculous by President Trump. Completely ridiculous. The idea that you're mad that a private platform that you do not have to be on as the president of the United States is doing something to censor your speech is ridiculous. Now, it is censorship in the micro sense, where they can censor whatever they want on their platform. You can't come into my apartment and write on the wall unless I let you.
Free
you
speech, Justin. Wall, come on. We have a right to write on your wall.
And I have a right to wash it over. I have a right to censor it. I can paint over it. It's my house.
Well, for him to be like, oh. Let's steel man this, though. Let's steel man this argument.
Because I wasn't done. I have an important point to make.
It's you said you had nothing to talk about this show.
Get off Justin's lawn.
I was being rhetorical. I have a lot to say. No, this is my point about this. This is I don't understand. Why does the fucking president of the United States need to use Twitter? I don't understand this. I do not understand. Is the argument that's where the users are? What does it matter? The media reports it anyway. Like, let's have the lawmakers actually make a good law. And it should be the president of the United States is not allowed to use Twitter in official capacities. There cannot be a POTUS account. There should not be governmental accounts on Twitter. If he wants to use a private one and tweet, hey, I just binged all of this new stupid Netflix show, and I'm just saying that because that's what they all are at this point, and I couldn't think of the name of one. Fine, you can do that on your private account. But there should not be a Twitter account for the president, for any of these official government positions. Furthermore, positions not in where they stand, but where they, what position they hold. Furthermore, why doesn't the government invent a way or just post on their website these things? If Trump has an announcement, why doesn't he just create an official government app? And then it'll be like, here's what the president says. Why does he need to be on Twitter? You're the fucking president of the United States. People want to know what you have to say. You're literally, they want people to go to their platform so people will sign up for it to see what Kim Kardashian says, to see what LeBron James says. That's why they have it. So when you go on there, you're driving traffic to them. You don't need to go somewhere to get traffic to go to you. It makes no fucking sense.
We'll just call it Twit.
That's fine. Whatever the fuck you want to call it. You can call it, here's that asshole in the Oval Office. He said something. And you get a notification. The asshole in the Oval Office said something. And it tells you what he said. I don't care what the fuck you call it. But why? You don't need to be on Twitter. You're the president. People want to know what you have to say. Jesus. Sorry, William. You can go now.
Yeah, I think that was a retarded rant. But, the president has free speech, too. So he can use whatever medium he wants. But let's steel man the argument. Get off the dumb rant.
Do you want me to not have you on this show either? It's not a dumb fucking rant. He doesn't need to be on Twitter.
That is how he subverts the media. That's how he subverts the media.
He doesn't need to be on Twitter.
He can do it from a personal account. There should not be a POTUS account on Twitter, an official president account.
Yeah, that's true, but Twitter is granting that.
I get your point, but I'm much more on Justin's side here. I think the fact that the president of the United States is on Twitter is a travesty in and of itself. But let's let William continue with
Don't call me dumb when I'm not being dumb. Like,
let's steel man the argument, though. Let's steel man the argument. So, Section 230 came about because in the early days of the internet, there was a problem. You have these new things that are transmitting information, and people were suing the people transmitting the information for libel. And Section 230 was put in place so the government could limit liability to the person making the speech and not the person delivering and transmitting it. And the analogy would be, you can use two analogies to kind of like understand this. The first one is, like, imagine you take out an ad in the newspaper, and you say that, that Justin is a member of Antifa. Clear libel slander, right?
No way that would ever be true either.
But who do you sue? Do you sue, Daniel for taking out the article, or the newspaper for publishing it? It depends, right? It depends on whether that was a bought news piece, right? Or if it was literally a classified ad. There's a difference there. Same thing with the telephone. If I pick up my phone and say something against social justice, and the phone company hears that, do they have the right to, disconnect my service? In current law, they do not, right? It doesn't matter the content, what goes over the telephone line. Now, if I use telephone lines to commit a crime, again, the phone company is not held liable. I'm held liable. So, should the same thing exist? I mean, that's what Section 230 is now, right? Is there a difference between someone providing a hosting a website and someone actually writing the content on the website? And there's kind of this legal framework understanding of that. So the question becomes, is Twitter, that this is what keeps coming up, is Twitter a publisher, right? Something that's controlling editorial content, or a provider, right? Is it just the infrastructure that's getting you the information? And again, steelmanning the argument here, when Twitter takes an opinion by Trump, not even a fact, and writes a fact check underneath it, it seems like they're violating that. They're editorializing on content. And further, there are FEC laws, which I know we don't agree with. It could be construed as a campaign, right? All these companies are primarily Democrat-leaning. It could be a unpaid campaign contribution. So I think I've done my best to steal mine. Am I forgetting anything?
No, I think that's right in terms of what the Holly Trump new conservatism argument is. I think that argument is wrong on both the law and the principle, since most of their reading of the law is based off of various courts' interpretations of the law and not actually what the law itself says, which is deeply ironic since Holly holds himself out to be an originalist, meaning that he would probably, you know, want to look at the text of the law and not what people have said about the text of the law. So it's particularly infuriating that he, a senator who was involved in law school with a group that I particularly like, who happens to promote an originalist interpretation of law, that he himself would avoid actually looking at, you know, the goddamn words of the law. In the law, it is written in plain English that there is no distinguisher between platform and publisher in the law. There is only a distinguishment between content created by the site and content hosted by the site. So, for instance, in my New York Times article earlier, the New York Times is a publisher in the sense that it creates content and it is liable for the content it creates, but it is not liable for the comments on its own site. It's not blanket liable or blanket not liable. It depends on the type of content. So in this instance with Twitter, I think Twitter is in fact liable for content it creates, i.e. fact checks. That is content. So if they lie in a fact check, if they libel in a fact check, if they slander in a fact check, they can be sued for that and should be sued for that. But otherwise, content created by its users, they are not liable for. And this myth, not that you're perpetuating the myth, William, just saying that some people are perpetuating this myth, that there is some distinguishment in the law literally between a publisher and a platform, it came out of interpretations of the law by courts that were, guess what, wrong in interpreting the law. Okay, so that's how it's wrong in the law. I'm not a lawyer. I've read too much about this. If you want to read great people about this, you should read Ashkin Kazarian at Tech Freedom or Neil Chilson on Twitter, or even Justin Amash has been gangbusters on this.
Can I ask you a question about it, Daniel?
Yeah.
Is this related to a concept that I just invented called the point of publication? And what I mean by that is Twitter provides...
I don't know, Justin. Is it related to the point that you just made up right now?
Well, that was a preface to me explaining it very quickly. Twitter gives the platform, right? It gives the, hey, you it gives the technology. We won't say the word platform because that's loaded. The technology. And then you click the publish button, right? So therefore, yeah, you're not responsible for it. But for the New York Times in a printed newspaper, what they print, they're responsible for. Even if they print an ad, are they responsible for that ad because they have the point of publication for what ads go in there or not? Do you see what I'm saying here?
Right. So your point is it's at the point of publication who's responsible.
Right.
I would have to dig deeper into that. I think I see what you're getting at, and I think that's basically correct, although I'd have to think about it a little more. But it's based on... Yeah, there is context to it, and this is specifically an online thing because of, as William was saying, this need for online publishers or whatever you want to call them to be shielded from liability. So, you know, the printed version has some different laws that revolve around it, which is silly in and of itself. But
Some of it's silly, but, you know, some of it's because of the different media, right? Like some laws... I mean, that's why we can't just have laws and set them in stone, you know, 100 years ago and let them be, right? We do need to adapt the conceptual framework of the laws to the new technologies. Unfortunately, right, I don't think we're going to do that here, right? Like Trump is trying to, and like we can all point at Trump, but any This is in particular hard because it's presumably a conservative, but we know Trump is not really a conservative. He's really a, you know, more like a Democrat from the 90s, right?
Yeah.
They're sort of universal, minus the Trump derangement syndrome, universal agreement that election speech should be regulated, right? So
yes,
I think that's the danger here is that because this is election speech or related to elections, that this is going to be a opportunity for the government to reach for power over speech. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that's
that?
Right. And I think that's why earlier I said it was both wrong on the law and wrong on the principle. You're right that this isn't Trump gets my ire because he signed the executive order. And it's because the loudest voices in this are folks like Trump and Josh Hawley and some of the other Trumpian Republicans in Congress and elsewhere.
Right.
But by the way,
and it's an example, Daniel, of every side, both sides thinking that the solution to every problem is more government.
Oh, totally. And I was going to say, by the way, Joe Biden also supports removing Section 230 liability. So I'm so glad we have choices in this country between someone who wants to stifle free speech and someone else who wants to stifle free speech. Oh, the glories of choice. But the principle here, and getting back to first principle, regardless of what Section 230 says, regardless of if Section 230 existed, is property rights. Property rights.
So
can we scream it loud enough? It doesn't belong to you, Donald Trump. Twitter doesn't belong to you, Josh Hawley. Twitter is not yours, Joe Biden. If it's not yours, leave it the fuck alone.
Well, and that goes to what I was saying about the point of publication. The individual accounts are not owned by Twitter in the sense that they don't operate them. Now, they own the infrastructure, right? And they say, oh, you can use the infrastructure, just like your telephone example, where whoever owns the telephone line is the company, but they don't own your phone number. It's the same thing. It's the first principle of individualism. People own the things that they do individually.
Yeah, it really is. Where we're getting so far away from first principles here and so far away from basic individual rights that it's hard to have a discussion, because I find myself getting in these rabbit holes on Twitter about Section 230 and what it actually refers to and what it means. And that's all important because this will all have to be argued out in court based off of what the law says. But at the same time, we got to step back. We have to step back and realize it's simple private property stuff. It doesn't belong to you. Don't regulate it. Leave it alone. And take the radical step. Do the radical thing. And deactivate your Twitter account if you don't like Twitter. What happened to that? What happened to that notion in this country of, I don't like this thing, so I won't participate? Now it's, I don't like this thing, so I'm going to force them to do what I want to do at the point of a gun.
So what's go ahead,
Justin. William?
I was going to say, what's the way out of this? How do we apply that principle? Because 230 was trying to get us there, right? It was trying to apply this principle of, hey, if I'm going to let someone borrow my property according to a terms of service, I mean, this is all more modern now, right? Like, we have this concept of terms of service and that sort of thing. How do we address people's worries about, people... like Twitter, you know, again, I'm steel manning the argument, right? Twitter saying this is our terms of service, but then not just applying them arbitrarily, right?
Right. And that's the difficulty with this argument, Daniel. William's point is well taken, because I could very well argue based on the principle of property rights and individualism that if you create a platform, or let's just use the building metaphor, you create a building, that you are then legally responsible for anything that goes on in that building and in that platform.
Well,
it's your platform and belongs to you.
Yeah, and to extend your metaphor, the building right now that my store is in is owned by someone other than me. But if they just came in and smashed all my stuff or said, you violated the lease, get out, I have a legal recourse, right? Right. There isn't an equivalent on these platforms, right? There is no legal recourse. When they say these are our terms of service, they always say we can arbitrarily change this at any time. Oh, and by the way, you know, we'll just also apply them arbitrarily. So how do we address
Didn't Facebook say at one point that and we own any content you post on our site?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there are any number of ways to deal with it. One is contracts, but there has to be a market demand for these things. And what I mean by that is enough people have to say, I'm not going to use your platform. That's how it starts. I'm very serious about that. Yes, Twitter is an important platform for reaching people, but it's not the only one. And until Twitter starts doing things that are in its users' interest, those users who think that they're being hurt should stop using the platform. They should stop buying ads. They should stop doing anything that helps Twitter monetize. And until they do that, it's not going to change. And by the way, it may never change because there may be enough people to make Twitter profitable that are fine with this sort of thing. And then the only concern is...
I think they all have blue check marks.
Go somewhere else. What was that?
I think they all have blue check marks.
They do all have blue check marks.
And Daniel, I think...
It's going to be a matter of competition. People don't like that. I understand because they've put in a lot of effort into building up platforms. But this is a universal constant in the world of marketing that people need to understand. The difference between owned media, earned media, and paid media. Everyone thinks that their Twitter account is in the owned category because you have access to that audience. It is unequivocally not owned. And you should never think of it like that. You should do your best to build up you and your reputation and your organization such that people will want to come to you no matter what platform you want, and they will seek you out even if you are not on a platform, if you simply have your own website and email address, etc.
You made my point for me.
Is there a role for government to set those guidelines for those kinds of contracts? Again, the metaphor here would be something like marriage, right? We have a set standard marriage contract. Should there be a set standard, I don't know, digital property rights contract or something? Digital brand copyright, something like that, right?
I'm skeptical because I'm even skeptical of marriage licenses.
Yeah, I was going to say, get the government out of marriage. That was a bad metaphor.
You know, that was my argument against gay marriage, right?
That was my argument against gay marriage. Is why are you fucking people arguing about being oppressed the same way we are? Congratulations, you now suffer like the rest of us.
You're not married yet. Soon though, you get to join that club. I'm skeptical. If there was going to be some government reform that I might support, and I say might very tentatively, and the libertarians I know just perked up and decided to firebomb my house. It would be something like reforming...
Oh, the libertarians are involved with the firebombing people's houses now?
Just my house, for my statism. It would be something like reforming terms of service writing. There have been some discussions about, like, should terms of service have to be in language that, you know, the users can read or something like that. And I haven't seen a good proposal in that regard. Most of them are way too... involved and way too prescriptive, but maybe something like that.
There's also
help.
Something about the fact that the terms of service are not bi-directional. And what I mean by that is, like, it's you cannot use a service without accepting it, and they can change it at any time, right? Those two things make it incredibly unstable. And I don't know, I don't know how that would be fixed, but whether, you know, and if any government regulation would be involved in that, but there's some innovation that needs to happen there, if that makes sense, right? There's something there that I can't put my finger on.
Maybe
it's tough because if you use the house metaphor, you use the building metaphor, like, it's not bi-directional to come into my building. You don't go, hey, I only get to come into this building if I get to punch babies when I'm inside of it. You just go, oh, you come into this building when you do what I fucking say, or you leave when I fucking tell you to leave.
But for the building metaphor, I do have time to, like, if the, you know, we were kicked out of our old location because they were going to lease it to a gym, But in our contract, we had time to get out, right? It wasn't like they just locked the door one day and were like, okay, we're destroying this space and putting in a gym. Goodbye, right? Well, like in the contract, there was... Also, they couldn't just like shut off our power or redo the gas lines, right? Without, you know, all those things were built in, right? And right now, we don't have that digital equivalent quite yet, right?
Well,
when YouTube changes their service, it's just on a dime, right?
Yeah, who's going to be the platform that innovates a social media lease?
Yeah, exactly.
Where you're leasing your account, and there are terms. And then if you violate those terms, you get a little eviction notice that pops up on your account that says this account is in violation of its social media lease, and in 90 days, it'll be removed unless these things are fixed.
Yeah,
I like it.
Boom! The social media lease.
Man, we solved COVid. We solved.
But they don't do it.
We solved COVID. We solved online censorship. What else are we going to solve?
All right. Well, let's solve racism.
No, we're not going to. You said it.
On to solving racism. And here we go.
I solved it already. Racism. Individualism.
Yes, it's true. Okay, so lots going on here, but the specific framing we'll jump into on this is dueling claims about who's responsible for the riots in Minnesota and major cities across America. Trump blames Antifa, whereas Minnesota officials point their finger at white supremacists and cartels.
Usually President not Trump two on Saturday, groups that work together. How many white
aren't
supremacists?
Aren't the cartels usually not white?
I wasn't going to say it, but...
President Trump on Saturday blamed at times violent protests that took place across the U.S. a day earlier on Antifa and other left-wing groups, as Minnesota officials claimed that white supremacists and even drug cartels were involved in stoking violence. Quote, it's Antifa and the radical left. Don't lay the blame on others, end quote, Trump tweeted Saturday, referring to far-left violent groups who often describes themselves as anti-fascist. On Friday night, and continuing, by the way, protests and riots broke out across the country in response to the death of Minneapolis man George Floyd while in police custody earlier in the week. If you're unfamiliar, video emerged of a police officer pressing his knee on Floyd's neck when protesters, what protesters have called another incident of police brutality against black men. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz announced Saturday he authorized full mobilization of the state's National Guard, something that has never been done in the 164-year history of the Minnesota National Guard, in response to the protests that have turned increasingly violent. I don't really know where to start with this, Justin. There's any number of angles to this. We could start with the police officer. We could start with the riots. We could start with protesting. Is there anything in particular that you want to speak to?
Okay, well, let's just start with the video first to get that out of the way, to frame it so it's the three of us can just be on record and it's inarguable as to what we think. Fair?
Okay, fair.
All right. George Floyd looks like to me he was murdered. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the difference between murder and manslaughter. I don't want to get into that. All I know is what happened was wrong. You don't kneel on a guy's neck for 9 minutes when there are three other police officers there. You don't need to do that to restrain the guy. It makes no sense. There is no world in which that is rational. That means, in my mind, that officer and the three other officers are morally responsible for what happened. Now, the officer is already charged and in custody, and the attorney of the county said that charges will be brought. He anticipates charges will be brought against the other three. So in this micro incident, justice will be served. Now there's the question about the macro.
Yes.
Well, maybe. We don't know what's going to happen with the judicial system, right?
Right.
That's what you're saying. That's a fair point, right? Okay, that's a fair point. Because that leads into the macro point. There is an issue with police brutality in this country. I don't know the stats. I don't know if it affects minorities more than it affects majorities. I don't even want to mention colors. I don't even want to mention races. I know there are stats about how many of each are killed We talked about those on previous episodes. But the point is, statism, now I'm on my libertarian horse, is out of control. They are not checking themselves enough because they do not believe in government for the people, by the people. And that is the issue. I agree completely that the system is corrupt and the system needs to be fixed. Now we can get into the discussions of the different protests and the riots and all these different groups and everything. But I want to go on record saying I'm glad those four are going to be charged, are charged, are going to go through the system, and I hope they're punished appropriately. But that does not solve the macro problem of statism running amok that, as we've talked about in the past, that they hire police officers based on an IQ cap. They're clearly not policing the police officers. And the idea that government thinks they have control over us, we don't have control over them. Now, I don't have a transition out of that. So, Daniel, if you want to go and William, you want to go and give whatever your thoughts about that are. I just wanted to be clear about that up front.
I was just going to ask William if he has anything to add.
No, I think this...
To this component.
I agree with Justin. So that makes me 100% correct.
Or dumb, right? It makes you dumb right now?
We've seen the militarization of police, which has led to lots of incidents. I mean, we all remember, what was this Daniel Schaefer incident that we covered?
Did I watch that video back then? Because I just watched that and I thought it was for the first time. Holy shit.
Yeah, they just executed him in a hallway and no charges stuck to that, those police officers. So we know we have a problem here. I will say that we have a problem with our police, as in their safety. We're unnecessarily putting them in unsafe situations. We've talked about it before, that the amount of SWAT teams being used is unconscionable. I had a SWAT team come next door because someone threw one of those bird scooters into someone's backyard. The SWAT team came to the old man's house and, you know, drug him out and put him on the sidewalk while they searched his house to find the scooter.
Jesus Christ.
The SWAT team. This is not a racial issue with the police. This is us letting the police down, the people who, the good guys that are doing the police work, want to keep us safe. And we're enabling the bad cops, right? The people who do want to kick doors in and hold people by their boot, their neck on the ground, right?
Collectivism enables bad people.
Exactly. So I'm on the record, ironically, on the mid-side here. I'm supporting the police and the individual citizens. So, Daniel, what do you think about that?
How dare you, racist. No, it's an excellent point, of course. George Floyd's
police
death is...
Police are individuals, too.
Yes, that's right. George Floyd's death is a horror show travesty that I do hope wakes us up to many things here. But one of the first principles that I want to make sure that we talk about in this show is, what is government and what is law? Government is a monopoly on force, a monopoly on the use of force to retaliate against violence. It is the idea that we choose an institution that's supposed to be a neutral arbiter, and that arbiter gets to decide when they use force against their own citizens in order to protect individual rights, theoretically, and at least in the best sense. And law is the direction of that force. Law says, here's where that force must be directed, in what severity, and what the consequences will be. But never forget that law is always backed by a gun. And that no matter what law we create, whether it's good law, bad law, all law is potentially deadly. It can potentially kill you, and it can kill you over nothing. It can.
Or a fake $20 bill.
That's right. Or a fake $20 bill.
A kid throwing a scooter into your backyard.
As close to nothing as you can get. Law and the government can kill you. With this in mind, we should always strive to structure law and government in its most minimal forms so as to avoid interaction with this potentially deadly thing as much as possible. And so when we look at George Floyd's totally unnecessary and horrifying murder, in my opinion, we need to understand what that means and what we should be advocating for. We should not be advocating for more government to make sure that there is racial equality. We should not be advocating for more government to make sure that social inequities are taken care of, and more government to make sure that any pet project or pet idea of ours is enforced at the point of a gun. We should be advocating to minimize government in our lives as much as possible to avoid all unnecessary death like this as best we can.
And so now, what you're saying is, Daniel, we need to wear law masks to prevent the spread of the virus known as COVID-19.
Now let's talk about the mob. COVID-19. Why the fuck do the police, are they so violent and want to hold people down by their necks until they stop breathing and die, and then, at the same time, refuse to use any level of force to stop rampant property destruction?
Yeah, it really is.
What the actual fuck is going on?
A shocking disparity. There are any number of things, I think, but Justin, one of them is simply that there are many deep things to be said. Maybe this isn't the deepest, but one of them is that we've lost any regard for property rights. We have no connection whatsoever with what property means to individual flourishing and human beings, and we've decided that property is totally disposable and dispensable, and that yes, your life is important and we should stop people from taking your life, but your property, well, fuck that, we can destroy property if we want to.
I pointed out on a thread with some friends that I was going to go watch the store tonight, and they were like, well, the property's, you know, don't be unsafe, the property's not worth it, it's mine. I pay for the government to protect me and my property. And I don't know that they'll be able to do that tonight. What am I paying for? I'm not paying for them. I think Adam Carolla had a great tweet. I don't know if you guys saw it. He was like, looks like there's going to be protests in LA. If it turns into, I'm paraphrasing, if it turns into riots, make sure to hit the meter maids first. Right? This goes back to what he said before about the police only policing when there isn't an empty bag involved.
That's right. The law only applies to those who are law-abiding citizens.
Exactly. we need to question why we have a police force and what their job is and what they swore an oath to uphold. I think there will be tons of support or the proper kinds of reforms. But we have to talk about the mob to get it back to that. What has changed in the last few years that have unleashed this mob? You know, we've seen it before. We've seen it in Europe more than in America, right? The Antifa mob and the manipulation of the mob. It seems like, again, with the history repeating itself, it seems like the stuff from the 20s or from the 60s, something has changed or morphed, so the pendulum has swung back in the culture that allows this mob mentality, this mob, you know, in the 20s it was anarchists, right? And now it's Antifa. In the 60s it was the hippies, right? Like, what has changed and what can we push back against and learn from history in this case?
Justin, any thoughts on that?
Oh, well, I mean, it went in a totally different direction because I thought we were done talking about the police. But,
Daniel, we can be done talking about the police. I mean, we can talk a little bit about...
You said something to prompt that, and it's related to what he said. So can you just remind me of what you said?
No, because I have total blackout. Here's what I'll say to you, and then you can respond how you will, which is... in order to get at the cultural point, I think we need to take a step back and work our way up to Antifa for a moment.
Right, which and that's why I'm having trouble responding, because I feel like we jumped like fucking 8 steps.
It's a choose-your-own-adventure book, so, you know, now we're just going back to...
Yeah, but I always died in those.
Well, let's unravel the conceptual chain then, because I think that's useful, right?
All right, Daniel, you were going to start unraveling it, right?
A tiny bit with the concretes, and maybe that's not where you're going, but that's where I'm going, which is there. So we have to distinguish first between protest and riot and looting, right? That's really basic, but I think it's really important because I don't want to be heard as throwing every single person there under the bus for the same reasons or at all, which is people who are protesting the violation of George Floyd's rights, i.e. the fact that he was murdered by the state, have a legitimate right to protest. We've talked before about what I think legitimate protest is. I don't think stopping traffic and burning stopping traffic or harassing people or taking over city buses and things, I don't think that's legitimate protest. But protest overall is legitimate and should be done to make sure that your voice is heard. Where it's getting difficult, and where this article started, by the way, is with the violence and with the looting, breaking into Targets, as Justin referred to earlier, burning down police stations, burning down businesses, stealing things like the one the one white guy who was stealing Legos from Target. What the hell? What sort of justice is that? So
I don't know.
The question
someone
is,
suspiciously looked like you stealing Legos in one of those videos. I don't know. Are you sure you weren't at a Target?
Wait a minute. So the question is, where does the violence come from? What is the ignition of the fire that sparked the rioting? And I think it's both ideological and maybe from a place we wouldn't expect. Justin, does that help?
Yeah, that's actually great, because it gives me 3 things I wanted to say, and I think I can say them all pretty succinctly based upon what you just said. The first is, I'm so sick of this fucking narrative of, oh, it's A or B that's disrupting the protests. Oh, it's either the black people are protesting peacefully and the white people are destroying everything. Look, here's what's going on. There are people who want to peacefully protest and have a legitimate point. We even agree, I think, with their point to a large extent. We may not agree with specifics about systemic racism, but we agree with there's a fucking problem with the police and they need to stop fucking killing people. So there's those people. Then there are the people who want to disrupt or want to take advantage of the situation. And those are a myriad of people. I think there's a lot of them who are Antifa, and we'll get into why Antifa is doing that in 2 seconds. But I also think that there's people who just want to loot. I mean, look, I don't know how true this stuff is that I was reading on social media last night, but this was Saturday night when you're listening to this. I was reading about the Orlando protests and they broke into one of the malls here. And there were legitimately people on Twitter saying, we're going to break into this store at this time, be there. So there are people who are looting just because they can take advantage of the situation and loot. And it's not just white people. I'm sorry, it's people of all races, religions, creeds, genders.
It's the
whatever.
One thing that
but it's just
is
property,
free
Justin.
TVs.
It's just property, yeah. Justin.
Well, this goes to the first principles, right? So I talked about that. It's everybody. Now we're going to go into the what's causing them to do that. And then I think there was a third thing I wanted to say, but I can't remember what it was. But this is the most important thing. The most important thing is all of this is rooted in collectivism through Marxism. And what I mean by that is Antifa is out there because they believe the system needs to be destroyed. Antifa believes that they're helping the protesters because they think the protesters are not violent enough. They do not believe in the peaceful protest because they believe the system is rigged and the system needs to be torn down and overthrown because they don't believe anyone has a right to own individual property, which then goes into the looting. The same people who are arguing things like systemic racism are implicitly accepting that premise of collectivism. Therefore, they can steal things because it's been taken away from them due to social injustice. So they're both coming from a similar perspective. They're just applying it differently. And that the worst part is they don't even realize a lot of the time that they're applying it in this way. It's implicit. It's why they're okay with it. They're not as explicit as I am about this argument, but that is what is going on. It is the idea of everything belongs to the group. It doesn't belong to the individual. Therefore, if I'm not getting my equal share, then it's unjust. And this is the problem with judging things collectivistically. I've talked about this before on this show. This will sound familiar to Daniel, but there was a professor, I believe from Harvard, who spoke at Clemson, and he talked about how communism and socialism, collectivism, necessarily degenerate into narcissism more than individualism and capitalism do. Why? Because in those societies, in collectivism, you are necessarily always comparing yourself to other people, and that necessarily ends with, I have to get mine. Because the only way for a collectivist society to be just is for everyone to be equal and to have equal in materialistic goods. That is the point we're at, and that is why we've gotten to this point. And that reminds me of the third point. The third point is, if you combine the two things I just said, that there is a multi amount of people involved in this, different positions, different points of view, although I will say this from that, the only people I've seen that haven't been looting and destroying but peacefully protesting are older people. It's predominantly people in their 20s and their 30s that I'm seeing looting and causing violence and destruction. I'm mainly seeing the older people protesting peacefully. Now, that's very anecdotal, but I think that's very, very telling. And then the second point is the Marxist collectivism necessarily leading to the violence. And then the third point is, you just fucking locked us up for 3 months and we're fucking angry about your statism telling us how to live our fucking lives. Didn't I fucking say this on the show? I didn't think it would take this form, but Daniel, William, remind me. Didn't I say I thought there was going to be an explosion of violence?
Yeah, I think it's... Someone had used the powder keg metaphor, and that is what's going on. And I think it's not... I know some people were drawing the parallels and saying, oh, this is primarily the violence, at least so far, has been happening in blue states. It's not so much that as it is the places that had some of the most severe lockdowns, right? There's a pattern here, too, that is starting to form. And yeah, I think that I don't know that anyone is explicitly putting those dots together, these criminals that are going out and looting and destroying property. But when I ask the question, like, what has changed, I think that is what has changed. Instead of it being a slow simmer with the Antifa stuff, and by no means minimizing, as we all know, folks who have been victims of Antifa violence, not minimizing that, but just saying it's a slow simmering, right? Focused around particular events to suddenly explode across the United States is different. And that was, I think, the difference, at least for now. That's the concrete difference. I think there is also a cultural difference. And I think that gets back to the slow simmer that we've seen increase over time since, specifically since like 2012 on, right?
Yeah. Do you think, just to ask a very mainstream question here, do you think Trump himself has added to the simmer, or do you think he's an excuse, if that's the right dichotomy?
The Trump question doesn't interest me. It really doesn't. It's missing the forest for the trees. The president, the government is so far downstream from all of this shit that it's ridiculous to say he flushed it. I mean, you've said it before, Daniel. Politics are downstream. They're a result of philosophy, of ideas. I think in this instance, let me just say this. False dichotomy, bro. It's both, right? The media has used this excuse for 3 years, 3.5 years, that Trump's a white supremacist, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, the CNN has been calling for this kind of violence, right? Been supporting right. it. I think you're absolutely right. I think it maybe just to interject real quick, maybe it's Trump derangement syndrome is another symptom, like a precursor symptom to something like this, if that makes sense, right? It's not Trump or the president. It's all the behaviors we've seen around Trump derangement syndrome applied more violently, right? As the violence has increased.
Yes, and what I want to add to that for my false dichotomy is you've led into it perfectly, is I do think Trump stoked the fires, and I think he has been for 3.5 years as well. You know, that's part of his game is, oh, yeah, you're going to say these ridiculous things about me. Well, I'm just going to make you look even more absurd to galvanize my base. And I think he did the same thing here when he tweeted and he was like, if you loot, we shoot. And stuff like that, where it was like, oh, so fuck, these people are pissed off and you're going to threaten them even more. Like, I know, like, if I'm angry and you fucking say dumb shit to me, I just get angrier. Like, that's the way anger works. And he knows that. And I think he did that on purpose. And he did the same thing where he was like, oh, fuck, I'm going to egg these people on and then blame the governors and blame the mayors. Like, he knows what he's doing. It's all part of the sick cycle of our status culture. That's all it is.
I think that's right. And I my question ended up being a good one now, didn't it, jerk?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Well, yes, I'm not interested in Trump in particular as being like, oh no, this is this is why I'm not interested in it. And you guys can answer this question, because this is something that is bugging me about this whole thing. We're seeing a lot of people here now going, it's not enough to just not be racist. You have to be anti-racist now. Silence is being complicit. Look, I'm not claiming there aren't racists in this culture, right? Racist people exist. Racist individuals exist. But I feel like, and I'm using the word feel very intentionally here, that people are making this out to be, like William said, like it's the 60s, like it's the civil rights movement. Like we're living in this like super racist, oppressive society. And I don't know, it hasn't been my experience. I've seen racism, but I've also been around a lot of minorities who have lived well and lived peacefully and not been bothered by people. Am I imagining? Like, is this my white privilege? Is that what people would say, that they're listening to this episode and saying Justin is struggling with his white privilege?
That is what they would say, which is just a form of gaslighting. It's you're not allowed to experience the world. Only people who have special access to reality are allowed to experience the world. I guess I have quote unquote white privilege by their definition as well, despite the fact that I'm Hispanic and grew up in an incredibly poor area with a single mother and had everything going against me in that regard. But I still have my white privilege, so I ended up fine. But my
point, let's be clear, you're 50% Mexican.
Yeah, I'm more Mexican than anything else, just to be clear. Yes. When people say to me those things, like, sorry, it's not good enough to be not racist, you have to be anti-racist. My point is this: I'm not signing on with what you call racism. I'm certainly anti-racist, actual racism, what racism is. But making comments about race, having opinions, supporting private school is apparently racist, which I absolutely do. I'm not signing on to all the things you call racism. So I'm not going to, quote unquote, be anti-racist ever in your warped worldview, because you have determined that racism is some form of Marxism and is a power struggle, and that is absurd, and I'm never going to sign on to that ever.
Daniel, and that's what's really bothering me right now, William, is Daniel's gaslighting point is really correct. It seems like on social media, everyone with any percent Marxist position has taken to gaslighting through the use of guilt and shame to make you look bad. So basically, they're already setting us up. And what I mean by that is, if they go silence is compliance, silence is being complicit, well, then they're going to point to anyone who didn't say anything and say they're evil. And that's gaslighting. That's your use of guilt and shame. Is it not, William?
I think so. And Daniel, you're 100% correct. And we talked about how Trump and sort of Trump derangement syndrome contributed. But let's talk about the left and their you know, this gaslighting and this redefinition of racism and feminism and this advanced collectivism, where, you know, we've gone off kind of on the deep end on that I think gets us up the next level of the chain that we're talking about, of what's different in the culture. And what's different in the culture now is it's completely the kind of things that would be considered absurd academic minutiae discussions or just in unintelligible messes in the 80s in academia are now just talked about in, you know, mainstream sources all across the internet, right? We have all these crazy definitions of what racism is, what feminism is, what, you know, what privilege is, right? What luck is. All these things are just accepted, and any, you know, it's become orthodox, and I mean that word in all the senses of it, and any nonconformity with that orthodox, immediately you are a heretic, and those ideas are racist, homophobic, all the buzzwords, right? You're immediately put into that category, right? And
totally.
And so we've had all this, if you guys remember, I know it was so long ago, I think it was only last year, you know, we talked about the alt-right pipeline, right? Remember Charlottesville and all that shit, and, you know, all this stuff going down, and people were like, you know, the threat is the rise of the far right. And we pointed out at the time, and we need to point it out again, it's this radical insular left that is unleashing this beast. And we've got to come back to the, you know, it gets back to civility, and here I mean it in the sense of back to civil culture, right? Respecting individual rights and the key thing being their individual, and coming back to those kinds, respecting those kinds of behaviors. Because it's not, the problem here is not, I'm going to lose our libertarian friends. The problem here is not primarily government. It is ourselves, the individuals in our culture. We need to take responsibility for the behaviors that we're encouraging, and we're encouraging those behaviors in all sorts of places. It comes back to that mob mentality. Yeah.
And that's a great way to say it, and sort of to bring this to a conclusion, if I could connect it to what I opened this episode with. When they're talking about being responsible, when you're talking about being responsible for ourselves, these people who are forwarding this position that you're talking about, William, and that I talked about, when they're saying, you know, silence is compliance and all these things, they're not concerned with themselves. They're concerned with other people. And they think if they fix other people, everything's going to be okay. Whereas I come from the opposite perspective. I told you about that video I watched and how I felt about it. And it had nothing to do with race when I was watching it. Because if that was about race, I would be like, well, the white people are destroying shit and the black girl's upset. I guess I'm on the white people's side because I'm white. But I didn't. I felt, as an individual human being, an individual being hurt. And empathy and compassion that the left loves to talk about, that's what I felt. And I cried because of that.
But you can't understand, Justin, the pain, because you're not black.
Right. Oh, how could I? Well,
No, you can't, according to the left.
Well, that's what I'm saying, where when we're talking about individualism and worrying about yourself, I know that I am not racist, because in that moment, I did not think about race and worry about race. I worried about what was right and wrong, and I worried about how I myself would react to that situation and what the proper reaction for myself is. Whereas these other people are more worried about how other people are reacting than they are reacting themselves. And that is another result, Daniel, of collectivism.
Hear, hear.
All right, then. I think that's a good way to end it. What did we learn this trip, William?
I learned that we have solutions for free speech and racism. We just need to look to ourselves to implement them.
Daniel?
I learned that, to my surprise, I would support emphatically a law that forbid the President of the United States from being on Twitter. Justin?
I mean, all I want to say is I feel better. I feel better having talked to you guys and done this episode. And that's what witnessing the farce is. You're not always laughing. You don't always want to call it a farce, but it just feels better to take a step back and just look at it and say, hey, here's what's going on. And ultimately, It's right now it's collectivistic secondhandedness, and that's the issue. Worry about yourself, ladies and gentlemen. And you know what? I'm here. If you want to talk and you want to sort things through and you want to say, hey, I'm trying to figure out what I think about this, I'll talk to you about it. I'll be your friend.
Very good, and I'm here too, but only for another week, and then don't bother me.
Well, he's on Twitter.
And Discord.
And if you text him, he replies to one of every 8 texts or something.
9, 11, something like that. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us this week on The Midside. We'll forego a lot of the plugging. Just tell a friend about the show, especially if any part of this episode really hit you. It did me, so I will be telling some friends again about the show. I'm sure they're tired of hearing about it from me. But you should tell yours, as they probably haven't heard about it yet from you. So please do share the show. Thanks to our Patreon subscribers, and until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin Emelzeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a riot.
Paramore Riot album is very good. Maybe I should put that on while I work this week. Make myself feel better.
We all need some more pop punk in our lives.